Hello, and welcome to Max XP for RPGs, the podcast where I talk about RPGs and whatever the hell else I want. Yep, first time I swear. It's been rough. My poor little four-month-old baby decided last night would be the night of loud screaming and trills and terrible, terrible attempts at sleep. My wife and I did not have an ounce of sleep last night, so I'm running on fumes, and that I'm fuming mad. Thankfully, my job as a salesperson means I actually don't see a ton of people coming in through my door, particularly in the morning time, at least within like the first half hour or so. So that gives me a little bit of time to rant my feelings out in a podcast. So, anyway, I'll be honest with you, it is fantastic having a kid. Oh my gosh, it's wonderful. But there are many, many sleepless nights, and some days you really feel it. Today is one of those days. So, enough about me. Let's talk about me. I'm just kidding. How on earth did you find this podcast? I'm actually legitimately curious, because I'm not doing this for, you know, for money, and I'm just kind of doing it for kicks and giggles. Excuse me. And I've actually started to kind of put together, like, a little YouTube channel, because I've said this in the previous podcast, I used to have a YouTube channel, and I thought, you know what, I kind of actually liked, you know, piecing together little videos and just doing, like, very minor editing and you know, just making little quick thumbnails, and I don't know, for me it was just kind of like a fun little hobby, and that's kind of what I've turned it into, is just a fun little hobby, just something to do, kind of, you know, when I'm not playing video games, when I'm not, you know, with my family, just kind of hanging out, you know, I have something else that I can kind of, you know, devote my time to, because that used to be, like, my D&D thing. I used to love getting miniatures and painting them and making terrain out of foam boards, essentially. But I haven't done that in quite a while, and I've lost my taste in D&D just because of a particular event that... there was a D&D game that seemed like it was going well, and then there was just this point when it stopped, and then one person in the room decided just to full-on freak out, and just kind of left all of us, and all of us just kind of silently started packing up our things and making our way out. It was like, yeah, that was, that was where I was like, you know what? I don't want to be a part of something where people feel okay to act like that, you know? And I think the biggest problem that I had with it is, like, that person never actually apologized, like, face-to-face. He had to send a text out to everybody, like, hey, everybody, just wanted to say sorry about my behavior. And I'm like, oh, no, no, no. You do not get out of this with a text. Like, if you're going to apologize, you're going to face me with an apology. And he never did, still never has, and I'm like, you know what? You know, I'm not mad at him anymore. You know, that's long, long gone. But I'm still, you know, like, I can't stand people that cannot face someone else when they've done something wrong. I mean, the way I've always acted, and the way I've been brought up. Is if you make a mistake and it involves hurting someone else, you face them directly, and you freaking apologize, and like the both of you can just walk away. It's over. It's done with. It's fine. We have nothing else to worry about. And you know, if they decide not to forgive, then you know that's on them. That's their decision. But that, you know, that whole circumstance, I was like, you know what? I don't want to deal with anything that has, you know, people that are going to kind of, like, try and avoid the confrontation entirely when they're the ones that started it. So, you know, that ruined my taste for D&D is just that, not necessarily the game, just the interaction, and that goes with everything. And on the sales side, I actually had a person, one of my coworkers promised them something, didn't deliver, and the next day they called, and the people were so mad that, that promise wasn't fulfilled the time that they were promised it would be fulfilled, that they just they asked that everything that was delivered to them to be picked up, because they're like, you know what, if that's the way you guys do business, we don't want to do business with you. And I understand that, and it took money out of my pocket, but I'm not talking about what I wanted to talk about. I'm just kind of venting right now. I understand where they're coming from, because it is not very fair for, you to expect something, and someone tells you that that's what you should be expecting, and then just totally not deliver. Just leave it and walk away, and then come back sometime later. And I mean, in defense for my coworker, he apologized and said, "Look, I will do it right now. I apologize. I got busy, and I left and I completely forgot, but I can do it now." But still, it's not, especially if you're, waiting all night on somebody and they just never show up. I don't know. That just goes with setting proper expectations with people and following through with what you promise, but also just conducting yourself in a manner that, how do I put it? Conducting yourself in a manner that doesn't that other people can trust, I suppose, is a good way of putting it. Trust is a really big thing for me. So now that I've had that rant out of my way, sorry. So what I wanted to talk about today, as I'm sure you know by now, is Xenoblade Chronicles 1 and 2, which are both fantastic games, but why I actually prefer Xenoblade Chronicles 2. And I know a lot of people are like, "Oh my gosh, are you serious?" And I'm like, "Totally, 100%. I love both games. I absolutely do. Every time I pick up Xenoblade Chronicles, particularly Definitive Edition, I have an absolute blast. I have an absolute joy with it." On the same side of the coin, I pick up Xenoblade Chronicles 2, and I have so much more fun, and I just love the world so much more. I love the characters. I love the story in particular. So let me kind of go over why I love 2 more, and why that one speaks to me. So, sorry, I was listening to my work phone. Let's see. Where was I? Xenoblade Chronicles 2, why I like it more. Okay. So one thing that I loved about Xenoblade Chronicles 2 that nobody ever really talks about is the fact that the gameplay follows a story, and to explain that is your main character Rex kind of starts off a little bit arrogant and thinks he knows exactly how to fight, thinks he's had he's had training, but he's never actually had particular practice other than against some not exactly tough monsters. And he picks up Pyra and he thinks, "Okay, well, I'm pretty good at fighting, but she's super powerful, so us together means we're nearly unstoppable, right?" He learns as he goes along, and he gains a mentor in the character Van Damme, and Van Damme teaches him a couple of new techniques, and Rex is like, "Oh my gosh, I never thought of using that way." And Van Damme, who's very experienced in fighting, and Rex, Van Damme has fought in wars, and he's been a mercenary for decades, and Rex is just this kid that, starting out, he's kind of slow and kind of clunky in how he fights, but then as the story goes on, and as Rex himself learns more, and as Pyra herself, no spoilers here, but as Pyra herself becomes more powerful, or unleashes her actual power, Rex himself actually, the player is progressing with Rex as the story is progressing in terms of the gameplay. So, you know, more and more things unlock as the game goes along, because Rex is getting stronger, Rex is getting smarter, he's learning new fighting techniques, he's learning how to use Mithra's power. Excuse, I'm so sorry, I just spoiled. You've played Smash Bros, I'm sure. You know who Pyra and Mithra are. So, you know, he's continually getting better and better. And it ties with the story directly. But the thing I love about this story is Rex, like I said, starts out as kind of a nobody. And the one thing that it kind of misses in the hero's journey, he was never particularly reluctant. He was all go-getter. Like, yeah, let's do this. We're going to do this together. But there's moments in the story when, you know, especially with Van Damme, and Rex realizes the actual gravity of what he's facing. And then, you know, later on when he's up against another very powerful character, and the entire team gets wiped out, and like he has this moment where he thinks there's no way I can do this. There's no way, especially now that we're missing our key piece. There's no way we can do this. And so he basically gives up and has to be like talked back into getting that initial fire, that initial desire to you know, to be the good guy, to be the warrior that he's always wanted to be. And it's, and you know, the story kind of really takes off from there and hits some very high notes. And it's so good to me that, you know, the Rex, being so young and being very naive, is experiencing all these adult things, you know, the experiencing the sense of loss, the sense of being completely overwhelmed, a sense of loss in a different way, in that he himself lost the fight, and how it felt to literally hit rock bottom, and to feel like you just can't get back up. And I mean, that to me is probably the most relatable form of storytelling that I've ever seen. And obviously other games and movies and TV shows, they've done that, but the way it's done with Rex is particularly moving. And you know, aside from the story, the gameplay is much more smooth compared to Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, including. And Definitive Edition feels good. The gameplay is so much fun. The world is huge, and it's a lot more interconnected than Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is. Xenoblade Chronicles 2, you kind of have to actually, like, essentially warp from place to place, because it takes place on different continents or different titans, as it were. Whereas Xenoblade Chronicles 1 takes place on two titans, but there's an actual connection between the two, because one of them slashed the other one with a giant sword that erodes and becomes like a little valley that a lot of battles between the two factions, the Mechon on one side and the humanoid Homs on the other, are continually battling it out and, you know, trying to get rid of the other, essentially. And while the story of Xenoblade Chronicles 1 is really good, I just think Xenoblade Chronicles 2, like, it really hit it home. And the world of Xenoblade Chronicles 2, like, you know, they both feel massive, and I think Xenoblade Chronicles 1 just feels a lot bigger, just because it's interconnected, but Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has so much, and so many little hidden details, and so there's so much to do, so many side quests, and the blade system is one of my favorites in the game. I finally got Cosmos after 3 years of playing the freaking game and unlocking core crystals, because it's kind of like a gacha system within the game without paying anything. You just collect core crystals, like common, rare, and legendary. Legendary gives you the highest chance for getting those rare blades. And Cosmos is one of those rare blades. She's the hardest one to get, supposedly. Has the lowest chance. And I actually got her. So the last two that I needed for the original blades, because I got the DLC and that added more blades, I needed Agate and I needed Cosmos. No matter how many legendary crystals I opened up for 3 years, I could not get either of them. And then finally, just like a month or so ago, I was just opening up Core Crystals. I was going through all my rares and all my legendaries, and even all my commons, which I had 99 commons, 99 rares, and I had like 75 legendaries. Went through all of them, and I got quite a few rare blades that were part of the DLC, and I finally got Agate, and the last one, which I think was a rare, I got Cosmos, and that left me with one character left for opening up Core Crystals, who is a DLC character. I'm like, holy crap, I was not expecting that. But that kind of mystery and that kind of feeling of what am I going to get is one of my favorite aspects of the game. And the music, oh my gosh, the music in both games is phenomenal, but particularly in Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I mean, the opening theme, it gets me every time. And the combat's very close to something like an MMORPG. It's just, I think the first one feels closer to it because you have a ton of little options and icons at the bottom, whereas Xenoblade Chronicles 2 has certain powerful arts that are set to three buttons, and then your blade art set, like your the attack that you have to kind of build up to, set to the A, I think the A button, yeah, the A button. So when you've used all the arts and kind of built up that blade art, then you use the A button, it gives you like a little active time event attack, and it keeps the combat really. It makes the combat feel like it's interactive, and just as much as like your typical action RPG, I think, but with the feeling of, you know, an MMORPG, which I actually really like. So, but like all in all, you know, obviously that everybody kind of prefers the combat of two versus one because it's a little bit less clunky, and the menu system in. I think the menu system in Definitive Edition, Xenoblade Chronicles Definitive Edition, was better than Xenoblade Chronicles 2, because it felt like there was just less going on, but at the same time, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 didn't have a clunky menu system. It was pretty easy to navigate. I don't know. The story, the gameplay, just about every aspect of Xenoblade Chronicles 2 just makes it so much better for me. And obviously, people are going to disagree with that. You can think what you want, I don't care. But that's, you know, my humble opinion. So, anyway, that's all I had for today. Thank you for listening, and we'll hopefully see you next time.